So nice to join you all. I'm going to give you the hospital response, which is, I think, common among most of the Boston hospitals. I've talked to a number of my colleagues, but hopefully this will help. We'll talk more about this in the second set of discussions about how did planning underlie what we do. But we have one emergency operations plan at MGH. That was the plan that was activated. It's the same plan we've used for hurricanes and snowstorms. But it was the plan that we turned on. We use plain language. We call it code disaster when it's a disaster, and that's what we used. The plan itself that we used that day has a lot of specialty annexes to it. So the command and control, the communication systems are identical no matter what the threat, but a mass casualty incident is different than a chemical or a pandemic or other incident in our plan, and again, we'll talk a lot more about that later. The point is that as you already heard, at 2:50, two devices exploded, and in an incredibly short time window, we heard from Boston EMS about the event, and that was spectacular. We've been working for years and years and years to make sure that communication happens quickly, and you'll understand why in a second. What was also typical, and thankfully was something we've all expected because we've studied other incidents in the past, is that the early communication is incomplete. So we heard that something had exploded at the finish line. I actually have, for the last couple of years, worked on the race course itself at Heartbreak Hill, which is that last big uphill before things thankfully head downhill into Boston. And I was standing next to an official from Boston EMS and an official from Massachusetts Department of Public Health. My pager was the first to go off of the three of our notification systems. And the first that one of them heard was also that there was an event, but that might be a manhole cover explosion rather than an explosive device. And that's typical of the way these events are going to unfold, is that the early information is going to be slightly incomplete. It's hard to figure out what you're really facing. So we actually started ourselves at the hospital trying to confirm with our contacts in EMS, elsewhere in public safety, with public health, what exactly we knew. Pretty quickly, we were able to confirm that there were devices, more than just a manhole cover, there were casualties. And very importantly for us, we were able to confirm that there weren't other hazards. And this is fundamental to a hospital response. You know, we're all taught in the sort of modern all hazards era to suspect other things, chemicals and radiation, especially if there's a blast. And if we were worried about chemicals and radiation, we would need to do decon for the patients arriving. And it was really, really important that we were able to confirm this quickly. The first few patients that arrived with us did not have time to be decontaminated. If we had paused and washed them off, I'm quite certain that probably five or six people would have died. And so it was really important we had that collaboration. We turned on our emergency operations plan that sets off about 150 pagers throughout the hospital and started doing what we normally do. And the first patient arrived 9 minutes after our first notification of any sort from EMS. This is just a brief list of the types of patients that we received, and you'll see how quickly they came and how critical they were. We sent six people to the operating room within 30 minutes. We sent five people to the operating room within 8 minutes of one another. And so almost couldn't get the elevator capacity to get them up. There were the injuries that you have read about in the press, which is a lot of amputations, a lot of severe blood loss and burns. The average blood loss of the first five people that we sent to the operating room was 1.3 liters. These people were about as close to death as you can possibly come. It's a testament to the amazing work done at the tents and done by Boston EMS that everyone who was alive at the scene arrived alive at the hospital and was discharged alive from the hospital. The challenge in a healthcare system such as we have, and I'm not sure where you're all from, but I guarantee you your emergency departments look like mine, which is they're horribly overcrowded. My acute area of the emergency department, I work in a big emergency department, 49 beds, 105,000 visits a year. We had 24 patients in our 17-bed acute care area, several on ventilators. We had to clear those patients out to make room for the new patients, had to activate our trauma system. We have 77 doors on the ground floor of the hospital. We had to lock them because of the security concerns. We had to mobilize lots and lots and lots of resources. This is how we emptied out our emergency department. If any of you do know hospital operations, the idea we went from 97 to 39 patients in 90 minutes makes a lot of medical jaws drop. This is the this is the picture of us. It was controlled chaos. Thankfully, a little chaos at the beginning, a lot more control at the end. But it worked, and we were very proud of how quickly we were able to assess, stabilize, and take patients upstairs. The reasons that, again, and I echo Chief Hooley's comments, that we hate calling it a success, we're proud of what we did while recognizing the tragedy that it caused for so many. The reason this happened was because of the planning, and I think when we get to this second question, I'm going to be really excited to talk to you about it.